Hey guys, welcome back to Daily Kaylee. This week's episode is just a continuation of the Night Stalker episode from last week. This episode today, we are going to be talking about his actual crimes as the Night Stalker. I'm breaking this episode up into four parts to stretch it out a little bit because he killed so many people. If you've never heard of the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez, he killed so many people. It's honestly mind-blowing how he got away with all of this for so long. In today's episode, we're going to talk about the crimes that he committed in Los Angeles before he moved on to San Francisco. So, last week, we left off with his first murder, which is actually not even considered his first murder because they had no idea that he had committed this crime until 4 years before he died. So, if you're like me, go curl up on the couch with your cat and get a glass of wine and just stay tuned. On June 28, 1984, 79-year-old Jenny Vinco was found brutally murdered in her apartment in Glassell Park, Los Angeles. She had been stabbed repeatedly in her sleep, and her throat was slashed so deeply that she was almost decapitated. They found Richard Ramirez's fingerprint on the mesh screen of the window that he had actually removed to get inside her apartment. The fact that that alone wasn't the end of it is so mind-boggling. They had his fingerprints already. All it took was that one match, and they knew who did it. And it still took them over a year to catch him. Like, I understand it was the 80s, but Jesus Christ, come on, people. 9 months later, on March 17th, 1985, Ramirez attacked again. He attacked 22-year-old Maria Hernandez outside of her home in Rosemead, California. He actually shot her in the face with a .22 caliber handgun after she pulled into her garage. She barely survived. The only reason that she survived this is because she held her hands up to protect her face, and the bullet hit her keys instead of her. Inside of the house was her roommate, Dale Okazaki, who was 34. And she heard the gunshot and ducked behind a counter in the kitchen whenever she saw Ramirez walk in. She raised her head once to check to see if he was still in the house, and he shot her once in the forehead and it killed her. Within an hour of this murder and attempted murder on Maria, he went to Monterey Park, California, pulled 30-year-old Veronica Yu out of her car, shot her twice with the same handgun, and fled. She was actually pronounced dead upon arrival at the hospital. These two murders, and then the attempted murder on Maria Hernandez, in one single day, attracted the most extensive coverage from the media out of any more of these murders. At this point in time, Richard was actually called the Walk-In Killer and the Valley Intruder before he was ever known as the Night Stalker. He was also described as having curly hair with bulging eyes and wide-spaced rotting teeth. 10 days later, on March 27th, 1985, Ramirez actually went back to a home that he had burglarized a year earlier in Whittier, California. He arrived at 2 a.m. and killed Vincent Zazara, who was 64 and asleep in bed, by shooting him with the same handgun that he used to kill Veronica Yu and Dale Okazaki. Vincent's wife, Maxine, was actually awake at the time due to the gunshot, and he beat her and bound her hands and basically asked her where any of the home's valuables were to rob them. While he was in the process of robbing them, Maxine escaped the bonds and retrieved a shotgun from under the bed, which was not loaded, of course. This pissed Richard off for obvious reasons, and he shot her 3 times and then grabbed a large carving knife from the kitchen and mutilated her body. He not only stabbed her several times, but he gouged out her eyes and put them in a jewelry box, which he also took from the house. The autopsy report showed that the gunshot wounds had killed her, so all of this carving up her body was post-mortem, which just makes it creepier. Richard, being Richard, left footprints from his sneakers in the flower beds, which the police photographed and cast, but still did not use these to catch him. From this crime scene, that was the only evidence they actually had. The bullets found at the scene obviously matched the ones of the previous attacks, and this is when they started to realize that these were serial killings. There was a serial killer at large in Los Angeles. Unfortunately, before the police could arrive, Vincent and Maxine's bodies were discovered by their son, Peter. A month and a half later, on May 14th, 1985, Ramirez returned to Monterey Park and entered the home of Bill Doy, 66, and his disabled wife, Lillian, who was 56. He surprised Bill in his bedroom and shot him in the face with a different .22 caliber handgun. Bill actually had tried to reach for his own handgun and was unsuccessful. After shooting Bill, he beat him almost to death until he was unconscious, and then entered his wife's bedroom, bound her with handcuffs, and raped her after he robbed the home for valuables. Bill died of his injuries while in the hospital. 2 weeks later, on the night of May 29th, 1985, Ramirez drove a stolen car to Monrovia, California, and stopped at the house of Mabel Bell, 83. And her disabled sister, Florence Lang, 81. Finding a hammer in the kitchen, he bludgeoned and bound Lang in her bedroom, and then bound and bludgeoned Bell before using an electrical cord to shock the women. After raping Florence Lang, he used Bell's lipstick to draw a pentagram on her thigh, as well as on the walls of both of their bedrooms. The women were found 2 days later, alive but in a coma, and Bell actually later died of her injuries. This was the first killing that was attached to his interest in Satanism. From here on out, it gets a lot darker. The next day, on May 30th, 1985, he drove the same car to Burbank, California, and snuck into the home of Carol Kyle, who was 42. He held her at gunpoint and bound her and her 11-year-old son with handcuffs and then robbed them. He actually released Carol Kyle so that she could show him where the family's valuables were, and then he raped her repeatedly. He also ordered her not to look at him, telling her that he would cut her eyes out, which I'm sure it's really hard not to look at the man who's literally robbing you and trying to murder you. He made her son wait in the closet, and before he left the scene, he actually made him come back out and bound them two together. A little over a month later, on July 2nd, 1985, he drove a different stolen car to Arcadia, California, and picked a random house, pretty much. The house belonged to Mary Louise Cannon, who was 75 years old, and she was a widow. After quietly entering her house, he found her asleep in her bedroom, and even though she was asleep, he still bludgeoned her into unconsciousness with a lamp, and then he repeatedly stabbed her using a 10-inch butcher knife from her own kitchen. She was found dead at the scene when the police arrived. 3 days later, on July 5th, 1985, Ramirez broke into a home in Sierra Madre, California, and bludgeoned 16-year-old Whitney Bennett with a tire iron as she was asleep in her bedroom. After searching for a knife in the kitchen, Ramirez attempted to strangle the girl with a telephone cord. He was startled to see electrical sparks come from the cord, and when his victim began to breathe again, he fled the house believing that Jesus Christ had stepped in and saved her from him. She actually survived the beating, but she required 478 stitches to close the lacerations on her scalp. I'm going to leave this silence so that you can just let that sink in. On July 7th, 1985, Ramirez burglarized the home of Joyce Lucille Nelson, 61, in Monterey Park. She was asleep on her living room couch, and he beat her to death using his fist and kicking her in the head. He kicked her so hard that a shoe print from his sneaker was left imprinted on her face. He drove around two other neighborhoods for a little bit, just kind of casing the place, and ended up returning to Monterey Park and chose the home of Sophie Dickman, who was 63 years old. He assaulted and handcuffed her at gunpoint and attempted to rape her. He stole all of her jewelry and then pretty much made her swear on Satan that there was nothing else valuable in the home that he could have taken. He left her alive. On July 20th, 1985, Ramirez went out and purchased a machete before driving a stolen Toyota to Glendale, California. So, you know, at least he purchased the machete. He has some morals left. He chose the home of Lila Needing, 66, and her husband, Maxon, 68. I really hope I'm pronouncing this right. I've actually never heard quite a few of these names. It's very interesting. He broke into the sleeping couple's bedroom and hacked at them with the machete. After he hacked them for a little bit, he killed them with shots to the head from a .22 caliber handgun. Even after they were dead, he further mutilated their bodies with the machete before he eventually robbed the home. Directly after this murder and robbery, he drove straight to Sun Valley, California. At 4:15 a.m. on July 20th, 1985, he broke into the home of the Covenath family. I truly hope I'm saying that correctly. He shot the husband in the head while he was asleep with a .25 caliber handgun, which killed him instantly. He then repeatedly raped and beat his wife, Somkid. He bound the couple's terrified 8-year-old son before dragging the wife around the house, pretty much asking her to show him where any valuable items were. While he was assaulting her and stealing the valuables from her home, he basically once again demanded that she swear to Satan that she was not hiding any valuables or money from him. After this, on August 6th, 1985, he drove to Northridge, California and broke into the home of Chris and Virginia Peterson. He snuck into the bedroom, which scared Virginia and woke her up, and he shot her in the face with a .25 caliber handgun. He then woke Chris up with the shot and shot Chris in the neck and then attempted to flee the scene. Chris actually fought back and avoided being hit by two more shots, but Ramirez was still able to escape. This couple actually survived their injuries. 2 days later, on August 8th, 1985, Ramirez drove a stolen car once again to Diamond Bar, California, and chose the home of Sakina Abawath, 27, and her husband, Elias Abawath, 31. Sometime after 2:30 a.m., he broke into the house and went straight for their bedroom. He instantly killed Elias, who was asleep, with a shot to the head from his .25 caliber handgun. He handcuffed and beat Sakina while also forcing her to reveal the location of the family's jewelry, per usual. And then he brutally raped her. This time, he repeatedly demanded that she swear on Satan that she would not scream during his assaults. This couple actually had a 3-year-old son that Ramirez did not know about, and he entered the bedroom. Ramirez tied up the child and then continued to rape Sakina in front of her son. After Ramirez left the home, Sakina untied her son and sent him to the neighbors for help. Her and her son both survived this incident. This is the last known murder that he committed in Los Angeles before fleeing to San Francisco. He actually only left Los Angeles because he would watch himself on the news. He would read up about what the police knew about him. He would wait for the news to come on in the evenings, just so he could pretty much hear about his own crimes. At the end of August in 1985 is when he left Los Angeles for San Francisco. And that is where we will pick up next week. I hope hope you guys are interested in this case. Honestly, it's a super dark case. And I've been interested in it since high school when I did a report on the Cecil Hotel in Los Angeles, which is what American Horror Story Hotel is based off of. I'm actually going to include that in my 13 Days of Halloween series just because it's really interesting, and I feel like a lot of people don't realize that American Horror Story, every single season is based on a true story. Maybe I'll include all of those in my 13 Days of Halloween. Let me know what you think, and I will see you next week. Thank you guys for listening. I love you so much.